everybody. Welcome to this evening's event. My name is Gareth Jones. I'm a Professor of Urban Geography here at the LSE and also Director of the Latin American and Caribbean Centre. It's my very great pleasure to introduce this event, which is the launch and perhaps hopefully moreover the celebration of Megan Ryburn's book, Uncertain Citizenship, Everyday Practices of Bolivian Migrants in Chile. We'd like to make the event as informal as possible, at least in parts, but to give it a little bit of structure and a clue to that structure, after I've done some formal introductions of our speakers, the event will go roughly, probably very roughly, as follows. Megan will say some words around her book, and then Kathy McElwain, to my right, will follow with some comments for 10 minutes or so, some quick points, maybe even less, and then Linda McDowell will follow, and then we'll ask Megan to sort of respond to their comments, their interjections. And then rather perhaps than have a sort of more formal and stilted Q&A, front of room, back of room, we will, by the time that this element of the event is over, have wine in the room at the back there. We very much invite you to grab some wine. If you buy a copy of the book, you can have two glasses. And to ask, interrogate Megan or perhaps any of our other speakers for half an hour or so, and then if you haven't had enough alcohol, we will be going to Ye Olde Cock Tavern on the Strand, which I think is 22 the Strand, 22 Fleet Street, sorry, Fleet Street, the Strand, that's all the same. Fleet Street, which is opposite the Law Courts, where there will be more drinks and some food available. This evening's event has its Twitter hashtag, which is hashtag uncertain citizenship. So tweet away.
Is that all one word?
All one word. I have no idea what that means, but yes, tweet away. Let me do some biographies. First, and perhaps most important for this event, Dr. Megan Ryburn. She's a British Academy postdoctoral fellow at the Latin America and Caribbean Centre. She was previously at LSE as a teaching fellow in the Department of Human Geography, in the Department of Geography and Environment. Prior to that, she did her doctoral work at Queen Mary College London. Megan's work focuses on migration and citizenship in Latin America, as will be hearing later, and increasingly also on issues around violence and borderlands. She has conducted both in her doctoral and will be in her postdoctoral fieldwork, multi-sided ethnographic work, as we'll be hearing recounted through the book, on Bolivian migrants in Chile, and with her new project, Colombia Migrants into Chile, particularly into the Antofagasta area in the north of the country. And she's looking really at, in that later project, at how these migrant women navigate the border and the sort of structures of violence, interpersonal violence included in those movements. Professor Kathy McElwain is Professor of Development Geography at King's College London. Her research revolves around issues of gender, poverty and violence in cities of the global south, especially in Latin America, but also Southeast Asia, Southern Africa. Most recently, she's directed a large ESRC project on violence against women and girls amongst Brazilian migrants in London and among those living in marginal communities, favela communities, in Rio de Janeiro, in Brazil. She's also currently working on a project called Step Up Migrant Women, which examines the experiences of gender-based violence amongst migrant women with insecure immigration status and and this is joint work with the Latin America Women's Rights Service. Professor Linda McDowell is a senior professorial researcher at the School of Geography and Environment at the University of Oxford. She's an economic geographer interested in the connections between economic restructuring, the labour market, class and gender divisions. She's been at the forefront of development of feminist perspectives in geography broadly and in contemporary social and economic change, as well as the development of feminist methodologies and pedagogic practices. So, without further ado, I think we'll pass to Megan to introduce her book.
Thank you, Gareth, and thank you so much to you all for coming tonight. It's really wonderful to see so many people here, especially when I know the weather isn't really in our favour, so thank you for coming out. So I'm going to just read some extracts from the introduction of the book before then handing over to Kathy and to Linda. Luz Maria was 19 when I met her. When she was in the last month of her second pregnancy, she would invite me to visit in the afternoon in her cramped, windowless room. She would apologise for the lack of seating and offer me cups of herbal tea, boiling water on the stove attached to a gas cylinder in the open-air communal courtyard surrounded by rooms like hers. As she talked, she would conjure for me images of a verdant place far away from that run-down Santiago tenement housing. What she enjoyed most was to tell me in intricate detail about the little rituals of this green back-home place, of the food and decorations she would prepare with her mother, sisters and aunties for birthdays, christenings, Christmas and All Saints' Day. Yet through the cracks in the narrative, I also caught glimpses of what had often been a life of poverty, hardship and frustration at the thwarting of her aspirations. This is what had compelled her to move from Bolivia to Chile. Luz Maria longed for the sacrifices she had made by migrating to enable her to return, with her new baby, to a nostalgic future. Here, her parents and in-laws would be in good health. Her possibility of continuing with education would be secure, and she would not have to worry about where the next meal and the next rent payment were coming from. She had come to Santiago in April 2013 with her partner, Wilson. They were both from the tropical lowland departamento of Santa Cruz, Bolivia, and they lived in Plan 3000, a poor peri-urban neighbourhood on the outskirts of the city of Santa Cruz. They met when Luz Maria was in secondary school and had a child shortly afterwards, in 2012. They both had ambitions. Wilson wanted to start a motor taxi business, and Luz Maria wished to complete the vocational studies that she had started when their little boy was a few months old. But by early 2013, they were in debt to informal lenders after borrowing money to cover healthcare costs for Wilson's chronically ill mother and to pay for a motorbike so he could start his business. In April that year, they discovered that Luz Maria was pregnant again. Worried about the debt, as well as about telling their families they were going to have another child, they felt compelled to leave Bolivia for somewhere with greater economic opportunities. They hoped to pay off the loan and make enough money to support their young family. Without telling anyone about the pregnancy, they left their one-year-old in the care of Luz Maria's mother and embarked on the 50-hour bus journey to Santiago, Chile. They had heard rumours that things were good there. You could earn a decent salary and send money home. Once in Santiago, both started working for contractors. Luz Maria as a cleaner and Wilson in construction. The hours were long and the pay was less than the minimum wage. Luz Maria spent much of her day bending and lifting, breathing in the fumes of powerful cleaning fluids. Both she and Wilson were in the country on tourist visas and therefore working unauthorised, which gave their employers leverage to exploit them. The couple was shocked by the cost of living in Santiago and could barely afford the rent for the unfurnished room that they found downtown. When Luz Maria was dismissed from her job after her pregnancy began to show, the situation became critical. Any money they managed to save was sent back to support their young son in Bolivia and to keep the debt collectors at bay. Even living on just rice and vegetables, they could not afford to pay for the Mercosur temporary resident visa that would allow them to work legally and in better conditions. Scared of the authorities, they didn't know where to turn for help. Luz Maria spent the first 5 months of her pregnancy too afraid to seek medical care, unsure where she would give birth. And yet, Despite all of this insecurity, they still found moments of joy in their everyday, sharing the rare treat of a fizzy drink with their neighbours in the evening, visiting Santiago's parks on Wilson's day off, and drew on all their resources to doggedly pursue their goals. Eating as little as they could, sleeping in a room with a bare concrete floor and no heating through this cold Santiago winter, working in precarious employment and without legal status, in Chile, Luz Maria and Wilson were living outside the bounds of some of the most basic conditions for inclusion in society. In Bolivia, too, they had experienced multiple exclusions, which had eventually led to their migration. Throughout this book, I offer an understanding of why and how the manifold overlapping exclusions experienced by migrants like Luz Maria and Wilson are occurring within and across nation-state borders in this global South context. I also explore how migrants, sometimes with the support of migrant rights advocates, seek and aspire to greater inclusion, as Luz Maria and Wilson did. Thinking in terms of migrant citizenship allows for exploration of these complex patterns of exclusion and inclusion, given that citizenship is one of the most powerful mechanisms for indicating belonging. Citizenship has increasingly been understood as encompassing both possession of formal legal status and the ability to access substantive rights, like the right to shelter or to healthcare. So by examining migrants' access to legal status and the degree to which they are able to exercise substantive rights on a day-to-day basis, it's possible to build a picture of how and why they may experience marginalisation transnationally and of how this may be challenged. I suggest in the book that it's necessary to find new modes of thinking about the shifting and uneven ways that migrants in different parts of the world live citizenship in the everyday. To date, migrant citizenship has often been passed in binary terms, so they're either citizens or non-citizens. And if not in these binary terms, then their citizenship has been characterised as falling somewhere within a triadic formation. That is to say, they can be categorised as citizens, non-citizens, or fitting somewhere in a third space in between. Neither of these approaches, however, seem to quite convey the cross-border entanglement of fluctuating multiple and simultaneous exclusions from some aspects of citizenship, but inclusion in others that many migrants live. This book proposes that one way in which migrant citizenship can be comprehended is by considering their relationships to different transnational spaces of citizenship, legal, economic, social, and political. In what ways are migrants, simultaneously and multiply, excluded from or included in these spaces across borders? How are exclusions produced? How do migrants pursue greater inclusion? In many cases, the complex array of shifting inclusions and exclusions from citizenship experienced by the migrants with whom I worked could best be captured by viewing them through the lens of uncertainty. It is the notion of uncertainty that encapsulates the sense of past and present instability, as well as future possibility, that Luz Maria expressed in the long conversations we had. Uncertainty indicates the temporal and spatial mindset triggered by migration, particularly when that migration has been compelled. It is the mindset of being here and not here, of constantly going, constantly becoming, of the present as a means to the future. Uncertainty also articulates the emotional timbre of migration, the jumble of fears, anxieties, and hopes that it generates. Uncertainty, however, does more than just capture something of the psychology of migration. In both Bolivia and Chile, Luz Maria had so often been living on a knife edge, poised between slipping further into marginalisation and reaching for greater security. This is the balancing act in which many migrants and potential migrants engage daily. Excluded from some dimensions, included in others, and in a constant state of flux, their everyday citizenship becomes characterised by uncertainty. This book tells stories of uncertain citizenship that have been gathered over an extended time across different sites, through participant observation and interviews in Santiago and Arica in Chile and El Alto, La Paz, Oruro and Santa Cruz in Bolivia. I feel very fortunate to have been invited to glimpse the lives of the migrants I worked with and to have been trusted to share the stories told to me. These stories and the living and working conditions I witnessed often moved me profoundly and certainly stood in stark contrast to my own privilege. I don't see either this emotional response or awareness of the power implications of my own positionality as things to be written out of these pages in a mythical pursuit of objectivity. Rather, my analysis is led by my sense of how wrong it is that these imbalances and injustices in Chile, in Bolivia, but also right here in London, can exist. Thank you.
Lovely. Thank you so much, Megan. It's really fantastic to be here at the LSE. In some ways, because it's a homecoming for me, because I did my PhD here a really long time ago, about 30 years ago, with Sylvia Chance, who's also here. And also, I can see around the room even other PhD, former PhD students of my own. So it's also really, really nice to be able to comment on what is an absolutely fabulous book. That I should also state up front, I was Megan's PhD supervisor. So I know this book extremely well. But what I would say, having reread it as a book, what an absolutely fantastic job Megan has done from turning it into the way that a PhD, as I'm sure most of you in the room know, that it's set out in a particular way. She's turned it into this wonderful tale. And we've heard some extracts that Megan's just spoken about, but this wonderful tale of the lives of these Bolivian migrants in Chile, mainly in Chile, but also in terms of their homes in Bolivia. So yes, the starting point is, although I knew it very well, I was incredibly impressed by the way in which she's recrafted it into this book. So in terms of when I was thinking about how can I comment on this, knowing this incredibly well, I thought it would be nice to think about how it reflects Megan as a person, but also Megan as a researcher. Because one of the strengths of the book is the fact that Megan's personality comes through. You very, very nicely said at the end that this is what you believe in terms of your sense of justice, and I think that comes through incredibly nicely. As you read through. So I wanted to sort of make three key links in terms of what I got from the book on my rereading, but also linking it to Megan as a person, obviously having known Megan for a long time now. And the first issue that really sort of struck me as I was reading through it is this theme of humanity. We've already heard that Megan starts the book, and she also finishes the book, around the lives of these two migrants, Luz Maria and Wilson. And she describes beautifully, at various points in the book, how they have experienced this uncertain citizenship and their migration trajectories. But it's not just Luz Maria and Wilson, but other migrants that I can also remember from even from the PhD days, Diana, Constanza, Cata, Marta. I remember them all, mainly because Megan has described their lives so beautifully in the PhD, but also in the book. And it's real testament, I think, to Megan's writing style, which is incredibly evocative, that one gets to know these migrants just so well. And another thing, which it's not a secret, but you perhaps don't know, that Megan did win a writing prize for her PhD while she was doing her PhD. And you can really tell in terms of the book. But it's also clear, and I think this idea of humanity, it also links with the integrity with which Megan carried out her field research. And that really, really comes through in the book. And Megan herself talks about her approach to doing the research, which she calls responsive and agile. But I actually think it's more than this, because it's about your quest for truth and honesty in the research that you're doing. And I think, again, that's something that comes out really, really nicely in terms of the really poignant things that actually happened, not only to the migrants, but also to you as a researcher. And there's this amazing sort of vignette towards the beginning of the book where you describe how you were verbally accosted by some taxi drivers when you were trying to put up some posters for the migrant organisation that you were volunteering and working with. And you talk about your tears of frustration as a result of this sort of altercation. Mm. And so you get this real feeling that, you know, you were really upset by this because you were trying to do the right thing. So I feel it certainly comes across that you weren't afraid to put your humanity and your integrity really central to the book. So that was sort of the first theme in relation to you as Megan and the book itself. The second, which in some ways is more is slightly lighter, but is this idea of a sort of a sense of adventure. There's a sense of empirical adventure, but there's also a sense of conceptual adventure. Because we hear about the geographical journeys of the migrants and the way in which you also travelled from Santiago to Arica and to Bolivia. And also how you occupied as a researcher, but with the people that you were researching, these different spaces, the Cité in Santiago, you talked about the parcelas and Arica in the north of Chile. And that really comes across in terms of inhabiting the geographical journey, the migration trajectory, and these places and spaces where you obviously spent a lot of time with these migrants. But again, I said, Megan has spoken a little bit about this, and obviously the title of the book revolves around this idea of uncertain citizenship. And I really do think that the way in which Megan conceptualises uncertain citizenship is really interesting and is itself really adventurous. And she interlaces notions of migration, theories of migration, theories of citizenship, and brings it together under this idea of transnational spaces, transnational social spaces of citizenship. And I really think that this has resonance beyond just the specific case of Bolivian migrants in Chile. So there's a sense of intellectual adventure as well. Then the final point is that I think that there is a sense of, and these are interrelated themes, but there's a sense of both hope and resistance in the book. Megan's been incredibly careful to give the people that she worked with some agency, and she absolutely has not fallen foul of talking about migrants as living miserable lives and being miserable people. And again, I think this reflects you as a very positive person, and a very positive person with a sense of justice. And there's a really nice quotation, again, it's near the beginning of the book, in relation to Luz Maria and Wilson. And you talk about the fact that, and this is a quotation from the book, despite all this insecurity, and this is Luz Maria and Wilson, they still found moments of joy in the everyday. Sharing the rare treat of a fizzy drink with their neighbours in the evening, visiting Santiago's parks on Wilson's day off, all drawing on their resources to doggedly pursue their goals. And I thought that was a lovely way of saying these are people who are struggling, but these are not miserable people. These are people who are moving forward. And the other really nice place, I think, in the book where this notion of hope and resistance comes through so well and so nicely is in your final chapter where you talk about the dance group, Corazón de Tincos. And particularly in relation to their role in fomenting political citizenship, creating belonging and generating placemaking. And again, this is another quote where Megan says, taking dance seriously as a political citizenship practice enables recognition then of a crucial way in which some migrant groups may express their hope of experiencing more certain citizenship. So again, thinking very positively. But also, it's again worth thinking and worth reflecting on the fact that Megan herself was involved with this dance group. And I'm not sure how many of us would be brave enough to actually do that. And in fact, correct me if I'm wrong, Megan, but I think there's a photograph of you in the dance group.
You can't see my face.
Yes, on page, whatever it is, 147. And I realised that Pablo, Megan's husband, had actually taken the photograph. So it wasn't taken by you, and I thought, that's Megan at the back. So I think it's lovely, and it says a lot about Megan, about your, again, it's partly your adventure, your sense of adventure, that you actually did this, and you talk about having to get your hair made up and the makeup and the false eyelashes. And I thought it was a lovely way of really showing how engaged you were with the migrants that you were working with. But again, finally, this is not just a book about the specific lives of Bolivian migrants. There are many, many aspects. There are many universal migrant stories. And the conceptualizations around this notion of uncertain citizenship, again, has resonance, I think, for lots of people, lots of us who are working on migration and working on issues of international development in the Global South and so on. And so really, just my final point is, it really is a must read. It's one of those interesting books that I have reread in this particular form for a really long time. And it really is, for me, full of humanity, adventure, hope and resistance, thanks to your writing and your sort of interventions and putting yourself right at the centre of the book. So, thank you.
Well, it's a stunning book. I agree with Cathy. Everybody should read it, and there's lots to learn from it. When Megan asked me to speak, I said, no, it's stupid, I'm an interloper, I'm too peripheral. I don't work on the Global South, I don't work in Latin America, although I do work on migration and employment in the UK. But as we talked, we met at the British Academy, where Megan is now a postdoctoral fellow and is doing some wonderful new work in Chile. And I have to say, I chair the committee that gave her the money. So, not that I knew her then. So, Cathy, you know, gave birth to the PhD with Megan, and I hope I will see the second projects emerging in a few months. But as I opened the book and began to read it, I realised I wasn't quite as peripheral as I thought I was. I now know Megan. But the first person she thanks in the acknowledgements is James Dunkley, who I've known for many years. And then there's Cathy and Kavita. I worked on a project on migrant divisions of labour at the same time as Cathy and Kavita, and we had many meetings. So I thought, well, actually, I am connected to this project in many kinds of ways. And it is a wonderful book. There's so much that you can learn from it, as Cathy said, about methods, and about conceptualising questions about migration. So really, I haven't got very much to add, and in a way, I think I'm in danger of replicating Megan's PhD viva, because I thought I'd talk to her about theory, scale and methodology, which sounds a bit more serious than it's going to be, really. Because one of the aspects of the book is that it makes you think really hard about your own work, as well as about Megan's, and about questions about migration, which, of course, are absolutely central to everything we're thinking about at the moment, including sodding Brexit. So I started to think about the parallels with her findings in Chile and other studies that look at the interactions between migrants and the longer-term resident population, who, of course, often are migrants themselves or second or third generation. And I began to think about how this idea about hierarchies of eligibility, about inclusion and exclusion that Megan draws out so beautifully through her empirical work, how acceptance for citizenship or for belonging, for work and so forth, are created. What are those dimensions of inclusion and exclusion? And are these hierarchies always racialized in some way or other, which is a question which has been absorbing me, perhaps with color, be more significant if ethnic origins are similar. Stuart Hall talked a bit about pigmentocracy, which of course works in many societies. And how do strangers who are of similar ethnic origin rather than different ethnic heritages interact with the resident, the local population? So all kinds of questions that are relevant in all sorts of societies. And then as I read the book, thinking about the key theoretical concepts that Megan works with, I wondered, is there a set of key concepts or theoretical approaches that unites something that we might call migration studies? Can we draw parallels across multiple sites? Should we even be looking for a common theoretical approach? What are the differences and what are the similarities between different patterns of migration over time as well as over space. What's really significant in this book? Is it citizenship? Mm-hmm. Yes, of course it is. Is it that distinction between legal and substantive rights that really makes the difference? And how does that translate? And I started to think about the work I've been doing in the UK, where I've been looking at citizenship rights from 1945 to the present date, comparing different groups of migrants. So white migrants from the EU, people of colour, African Caribbean migrants, and of course Irish migrants who are de facto citizens in the UK. So how does that work out? Does citizenship always trump colour or not? What factors are different in different times? And how, of course, are things going to change with Brexit when people... Anyway, so I began to think about this whole notion about transnational spaces of citizenship and how we use it in different places. And you don't have to answer any of these questions. So how have they constructed those transnational spaces? Is it through the intersection of scales? Is it through the way in which transnational regulation, national regulation of immigration, rights within a country, practices within a locality, how do all those different scales fit together when we're thinking about the intersection of rights, inclusion and exclusion in the four spheres of life that you look at, the social, the economic, the political and the legal? So I think these are really interesting questions about how to frame these difficult questions. And in this book, Megan has done a fantastic job, because think how complicated it is to put together notions of transnationality, legal rights, different scales, different places, different national origins. And she does it with the lightest of touch, with these beautiful empirical examples. You really feel the lives of the people that she's writing about. And I've never been to either Bolivia or to Chile, but I felt as if I was there at times. And there are other photos as well, which are nice too. So, you know, it raises some really interesting questions for all of us who are interested in ideas of migration and rights, inclusion and exclusion. And then I thought about this notion of uncertainty. I thought it was a really interesting notion to work with. And I thought, how does it differ from some of the other terms that many of us are working with at the moment? I talk about precarity or precarious position. Is that different to uncertainty or not? Is it constructed in the same way? What about irregularity or marginality? You know, do the concepts that we draw on make a difference to the kind of questions we ask? Now, those are rather PhD Viva-like questions. So I just want to end by talking about Megan's next piece of work, which, of course, I was lucky enough to know something about, and the rest of you don't yet, well, except Gareth talked about it a little bit. So it's going to be about Chilean women migrants. No. Bolivian. No, Colombian. Oh, see, I can tell I'm not a Latin American. I just about know where those countries are. Colombian women migrants going to work in a desert community in the Atacama Desert. And she's going to look at all the different kinds of female-dominated jobs that they work in this very fluid and flexible place. And here Megan's drawing on, going back to an early feminist theory, Gloria Andalucia... notion of borderlands, but also Henrik Wey's notion of navigating, which is such an interesting concept. And may I give you the title for your next book? Well, you probably know what it is, but Navigating Borderlands. Isn't that a fabulous title? So I hope in 2 years' time you'll ask me back and we'll be doing this all over again.
I'll do my best to respond. And first, I just want to say thank you so much to both of you for such really generous comments. And Kathy was a fantastic PhD supervisor. And
you need to say that.
It's true.
And her research on migration, violence, poverty and gender has really continues to inspire me. It wasn't just for the, you know, this book and this project, but also in the work I'm doing at the moment. And I know it does many others as well. And likewise, Linda's work has been really influential for me and for a lot of us here, in terms of our understandings of gender, migration and working lives, and to the development of feminist research methodologies. And so I'm really grateful having you both engage with the book and my work more broadly. And yeah, particularly sort of picking up on the methodologies point, I'd say, yes, you both in different ways through reading your work and then through working with Kathy had a huge influence on how I think about methods and how I think about my interactions with my research participants. And Kathy, I think, you know, working with you and seeing your commitment to working with organisations has been really inspirational and something I would really hope to emulate. So yeah, both in different ways have been really, really important for the methodological perspective I've taken and that I try to enact. And sort of, if I can try to address some of the PhD Viva questions. No, I think they're really, really helpful things to think through and think with. And actually, some of them take me back to conversations Kathy and I had throughout the PhD, where we were grappling with these concepts and how to mobilise them. In particular, uncertainty, really kind of trying to, it was James who
we
said
James
we should say James Dunkley he yeah. was saying we was trying to figure out what it was I was talking about citizenship, what described this state that people were experiencing, and he said I think it's sort of uncertainty, and from there I developed this idea, and also then came to realize there's actually a lot of work, sort of ethnographic work in the Global South that is starting to use uncertainty conceptually. And I suppose precarity, more than in the book and the PhD, I engaged with precarity as well. But I found for me, because it's quite linked to sort of talking about the economic and labour market, it wasn't that I didn't find it helpful, but I was trying to use something that kind of allowed me maybe to broaden out a bit and also kind of maintain that notion of possibility. And for me, uncertainty kind of maybe had that within it, there's a kind of a possibility of aspiration. So that was kind of, but I remember these back and forth conversations over uncertainty, precarity, marginality. And then I think the other two things that I really want to take forward in the new project that you picked up on are particularly thinking through sort of the racialization of citizenship and how that plays out. Because whilst I discuss it in the book, I think I don't engage with it perhaps as fully as I could. And that's in the next project, that's one of the things that's motivating me to take forward this new project, to think more about race and about, is that about colour? Is that about, what does this mean? And is there this kind of, these hierarchies of acceptability, how do these play out in different spaces and places? And finally, scale. Likewise, in the next project, I always tried to keep a sense of scale here, but I think it sometimes got a bit lost. And I think going forward, I want to think particularly about relationships between the body and the private and the public spheres and how that plays out in migrant women's lives particularly. So that's kind of, yeah, you've pointed to the new directions I'll be taking. So yeah, thank you for that to both of you so much, and I hope I've given a bit of an answer to some of the points you raised.
I was going to say it's such a nerdy geographer's thing anyway to talk about scale. You know, we have to have something that's geographical. So you know, we roll out scale whenever possible.
We can. Well, I remember we had a lot of conversations about scale and thinking about scale and space and how it fits together.
And it is inherently scalar because. Not just because it's migrants, but the fact that there are journeys.
You
do look at the journeying aspects as well. Mm. So it was quite fluid in that way. Because you went, you know, you did interviews in three different places.
Yeah.
Or more than that, four different places.
I became dizzy by the end of it.
Thank you. I meant to say, actually, the ambition of working, of doing a multi-sided ethnography is absolutely stunning and... it made me astonished me. I could not have done this work. I think your courage and your commitment just shines through it. I mean, heavens.
Well, thank you. I'm not sure I'd necessarily recommend it, but it was certainly. I learned a lot from it.
Yeah. Yes, probably every ethics committee in the universities nowadays is oh.
No, I still use Megan's example. You know, when people are saying, "Is this ethically okay?" and I say, "Well, I did have this case once. earthquakes, human trafficking, all sorts of things." So, but you dealt with it brilliantly.
Thank you. Well, thank you to you both. And I'd like to say some final thank yous to conclude, if we're at that sort of stage in the evening. Or do you think
maybe
that's okay, Gareth?
Have a go.
So again, Kathy, I wanted to thank you for your mentoring during the doctorate and beyond. And unfortunately, James Dunkley can't be here tonight. The snow in Oxfordshire is preventing him.
What?
No. He's on his way there.
The fear of snow in Oxfordshire.
Yes, I know. Somebody got the weather up.
But he was also part of my supervisory team at Queen Mary University of London, and his rich sort of analytical insights, as I've indicated, really informed the thesis in the book. So here at the LSE, both at the Latin America and Caribbean Centre and in the Department of Geography and Environment, I found a really ideal home to complete it. And thanks in particular to my mentors, Gareth Jones, and to Claire Mercer, who, again, can't be here, but who've been so encouraging from the outset. And I'd also like to particularly mention colleagues Sylvia Chant, Ryan Sentner, and Austin Zeiderman, who've been very generous in offering moral and intellectual support, but also practical advice in the 2.5 years it's taken to get this published. And thanks to Nikki Armstrong, who is there, for all her work organising. And I'm really grateful as well to the friends from my PhD cohort at Queen Mary, some of whom are here, and to other friends from Cambridge and London, who helped me intellectually, but also ensured that the book and the PhD didn't take over my life. So thank you. And I'm sorry I can't mention you all by name. And then I want to say as well a really big thank you to my husband, Pablo Torres, who's played a huge role in this and made many and varied contributions. And I think perhaps above all, I really appreciate the emotional sustenance that he provided in the moments when fieldwork did become overwhelming. As he listened, as I tried to process these difficult stories that were sometimes shared with me, and cheered me on when a magnitude 8.2 earthquake and a bout of severe food poisoning hit me in quick succession. So, gracias por todo. And finally, this book is dedicated to my mum, Liz Ryburn, and to the memory of my dad, Murray Ryburn. Very fittingly, they met here at LSE on a course called Crime and Delinquency when they were studying for their Masters in Social Work. And as I say in the book, thank you to you both for inspiring in all three of us through actions and conversations a concern with social justice.
Thank you.
Thank you, Megan. Clearly, from the comments of Linda and Kathy, and also because I've read the book myself, you've written really a fantastic monograph here. It's a kind of cliche, I guess, of book reviewers and book endorsers that this is the book that we need right now. But I think from these kind of comments, I think it's very clear that we do. And whether it's sodding Brexit, and we will censor the podcast later if the language gets any worse on this topic. And it might do because of topics like what's going on in Venezuela with migration there, but also caravans to the Mexican-US border, etc. What is going on in your book is clearly a much bigger landscape of kind of events and the lives of those affect. But also from what Linda and Kathy have said, the sort of interaction of hope and uncertainty, that these are not opposites, necessarily speaking, but also the lessons around methodology that you've already touched upon. And I think, and importantly, and I really love the fact that Linda more than once used the word feel and feeling in her comments, that the style of writing that takes place in this book is, I think, really, really important. So thank you very much, and thank you also, I should say, for being the postdoctoral candidate, no pressure on the rest of you, to to pay me occasionally in mojito flavoured chocolates. On that note, and because we wanted to avoid Q&A and that sort of sense, we will open up to the back of the room where there is some wine. I'm told it's Chilean wine, so hey. And if you're still able to, then navigate with us over to Ye Olde Cock Tavern afterwards, where we'll continue the celebration with Megan, family and others.
And
thank you very much.
Is the book on sale?
Yes.
The book is on
thank
sale,
you.
I believe. Yes. Consume.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So,